Philip Morgan.
LAW, how's it going?
It's good, man. I have a question for you. I've had a lot of people reach out to me, maybe not a lot, but a fair amount of people reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Uh-huh.
Because they've seen one or more of my videos.
Yeah.
And today a guy reached out and said, "Hey, I watched one of your videos a month ago or 2 months ago, and I can't find it. Can you send it to me?"
Uh-huh.
And of course I'm thinking, well, you could find it. Maybe you just didn't look hard enough, but sure, I'll do that.
Okay.
Because it's on LinkedIn. So I sent him the link to it. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him a question.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "No, I don't need your help right now." Sort of like, "Hey, back off, buddy. What's the big idea with you like asking me questions?"
Mm-hmm.
And that just felt like, first of all, really crappy to me, because I'm like, you know, on the one hand, I create this material and it's free, but like, don't I have the right to like ask you a question if you're now going to use this to go off and try it?
Uh-huh,
and secondly, isn't that like bad karma on this guy's part?
Possibly. I mean, you know, one of the sayings that I don't do a great job of keeping in mind is, you know, you never know what kind of day somebody's having or what kind of battles they're battling. I'm not trying to be all preachy, but, you know, who knows? That's where I feel like our belief, I think our shared mutual belief that a sort of generosity first approach is best. I think that's where we get challenged on that by life. And it's like an opportunity to say, "Hey, do you really mean it? Do you really mean that you should be of service even to people who don't appreciate it?" So, yeah, I mean, I agree that's kind of substandard behavior on that dude or dudette's part. But, yeah, you know, it's all in the game, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that last point. I just think it's interesting that it seems like the orientation of most people is to take. And, you know, my reaction was feeling like, well, hey, man, I'm not like a content robot. Like, I don't...
You're a content bending machine.
Right. Right. Well, I'm not, because he didn't pay for it. So, you know, you don't get things free from the vending machine.
Well, they got those free newspapers with advertising in them and, you know, like the Willamette Weekly.
Oh, sure. Okay, I have another off-topic question for you, Philip.
Let's do it.
Wild, Wild Country. Have you heard of this Netflix documentary?
No, I have not.
So
I'm
it's about the...
by the name.
The Bhagwan? And the Rajneeshis in Oregon, in Antelope, Oregon.
Oh.
Are you familiar with the story?
No. I'm sort of lightly familiar with this cult that operated out of Eastern Tennessee, sort of close to Knoxville. The Family, I think they were called. Anyway, not familiar with this one.
Oh, interesting. So I didn't know about it either. I recommended it today to everybody on my newsletter. Just like totally unrelated to selling and consulting, obviously, but I just thought it was amazingly well done as a documentary. It's a 6-part documentary and they have lots of footage from the time. But one of the things I found most fascinating about it is it was a national news story for years.
Uh-huh.
And they, the Rajneeshis, the name of this community, the name they gave to themselves,
mm-hmm.
did some really horrible things to the community here.
Yeah.
And I mean, people went to prison as a result of what happened there. It was fascinating. Anyways, I know you used to live here, so I was wondering, did everybody here know about this? Because I had never heard about it.
I don't remember anybody discussing it when I lived there. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. It was in the mid-80s, so it was definitely a while before you were here. But weren't you here in the mid or late 90s?
No, it was after Y2K that I moved. I mean, not right after, but sometime after that. So no, I guess that sort of institutional memory has faded a little bit. You know, my ex-wife left me for a cult leader, so I've always been somewhat interested in cults.
Uh-huh.
This place in Tennessee was, the farm, not the family, but the farm. Lewis County, Tennessee. It wasn't really so much a cult as a commune. Anyway, that is interesting. I will have to check that out. In terms of documentaries, I've been watching, I think it's Soundbreaking. Have you seen that one?
No, what is that about?
Oh, man, it is so interesting. It's sort of a documentary about how music is made. So sort of from the perspective of the producers and the recording engineers and also the interviews with just tons of really interesting artists. I'm just on the first episode, but it looks to me about at least as interesting as the Invincibles.
The Defiant Ones.
The Defiant Ones, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, it's in that vein of like telling stories about music and good stuff. It's a PBS thing.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah.
Now,
are you thinking about joining a cult? Are you looking for advice on that?
No, I'm forming my own. It's okay. About selling consulting services. Would you like to be a part of it?
You know, send me your literature. I'll check it out.
The only downside is you have to cut ties with all friends and family, and you have to be 100% devoted.
Yeah, I don't really have that many friends, so I think that's fine. Sounds like a good deal to me.
Sounds like I'll come ahead. I'll have more friends. Thank you.
Yeah, trading up.
So question for you, non-cult related. Do you have anything to promote today, Philip?
Shoot. I should have thought about this before. Well, I'm opening up next month. So we're here in May. In June, I'll be opening up seats in the first workshop in specialization school. And I'd like folks, if they're wanting like a really a fixed price, closed-end, structured way to work through the decision-making about how to specialize, I'd like them to check that out. It's at specializationschool.com. It's the first workshop. That's the only one I'm opening up next month. So that's my little promo this time. How about you, buddy?
You know, I should definitely have a training to promote like you do, but unfortunately I don't. You know, I think one thing I would promote is if anybody here is not part of it already, I do have a free sales course, salesin30.com, but I have a little bit of a call to action here. I'm not going to promote anything. Uh-huh. Here's what I want to know from you if you're listening to this. If you are trying to improve your sales, or maybe more directly, just the revenue that's coming into your business, are you more interested in the process by which you should do it or the mindset that you should have? Email me directly or hit me up on LinkedIn. My email is liston@liston.io. This is an unofficial poll. I think I know the answer already, so it's not very scientific, but I would love to hear from you about how you think about improving your revenue.
Nice. All right.
So on that note, Philip, I have been writing, making videos, and publishing content all week on the topic of talking too much and blowing the deal. And it got me thinking more generally. There are moments for sure when we as consultants talk too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of wondering, why is that happening? And is it even possible? Why don't we start there? Can a consultant talk themselves out of their own good graces with a client or a potential client?
I think so. I'm trying to think if I've ever done this. And part of the problem there is a sort of self-awareness that might not have been as well developed at the time that I did it. So I want to say on that basis, given that I suspect that I did it and I just didn't know I was doing it, I want to say, yeah, I've probably done this. And maybe I've even done it recently. But yes, I think for sure they can. And I have a theory about why, but I'm curious. What's your take on that question? Can it happen?
My take is absolutely. I know because I've done it.
Wait, do you have a specific memory of a time that you did it?
No, not in so far as I could tell a story about it right now.
Okay.
But I know there are times when you're in a sales situation, you're trying to talk to a potential client and, you know, they're asking you questions and you're answering questions and maybe asking them questions. And you can see the whole mood of the conversation shift at a certain point.
It's like the air going out of a balloon.
Right. And then, you know, often you'll know when this happens because the conversation will conclude with something like, Well, that was great. I'll be in touch.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
Yeah, right. Like, okay. You don't mean that at all. It's like asking, you know, let's do lunch in LA. No one means that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've definitely been there. And why does it happen? I think there are lots of reasons. Go ahead, Philip. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I do have a theory, which is I feel like we have this expectation of what our role is. As you know, as soon as we start using the C word to describe ourselves, I mean, consultant, right? We start to have this expectation of like, oh, we're the person or people with the answers. We're the person or people with the, you know, the expertise that, you know, is exactly fits this situation. And I think it's very easy when you see that as your self-image to say, if there is silence, it's because I haven't talked enough. Or if these people are looking confused, it's because I haven't explained things well enough. I'd bet more than half the time, that's not the reason why there's silence. And hopefully we can get to that, because in sales, I'm sure you're saying this all the time, you know, like silence in the right time and place is so powerful.
Yeah, you know, I was likening silence to white space in design. So there's this theory in design about using white space. And basically what it says is, if you throw too much at a page or any design that you're creating, the user, the recipient of the message that you're trying to convey through that design won't know how to contextualize it, how to make meaning out of it, which things are related or not. You know, then that's, you know, a theory of grouping in design. So there's all these uses for white space. But I think more than anything, the way I would summarize silence in a selling situation is A, it adds emphasis and gravity to what you just said. Like I just did right there.
Boom. See, it's a punctuation the way you used it right there.
It is, exactly. And so you can just let the words hang there. But I think also what happens is, especially when you're in a moment with a potential client where they say, well, how much is this going to cost? And you say, well, I think it'll be about $10,000. And then instead of being quiet, you start to fill in the space with justification about the price, about how you arrived at it, about all the great things you did for other people. And it really sounds defensive and lacking in confidence. That's one big thing that I see when people are talking too much.
I'm thinking to myself, like, what could you possibly say at the end of naming the price? The only thing I can think of is, and I collect payment up front for that. That's the only thing that would be appropriate other than silence at the, you know, a moment of silence. It's not infinite silence. It's not intimidate them into speaking, but it is a moment of silence.
That's right. It's definitely not about intimidation, but some people will need a second to think about it. And rather than interrupting them with wherever you think the conversation needs to go afterwards, it's really about giving them space to have a reaction and a moment to think about it, because you're going to learn a lot once they start talking again. The other thing, of course, is when you leave the silence there, it is uncomfortable for a lot of people to be silent, which means they're going to start talking. Like, it's not a power play, but I need to know from them, what do you think about this? Should we continue in this relationship or not?
Right. Yeah. And of course you can ask that point blank, but also often that's what naturally happens when you leave the silence. Someone I'm connected to on Twitter gave their first public talk, maybe of any kind. And they were talking about listening back to the tape and hearing a bunch of ums and ahs. I'm reminded of that because I used to be better at public speaking than I am now, because I just had more opportunities to practice it. When I was doing technical training, I was up in front of a group of people 4 or 5 days a week, 2 to 3 weeks out of every month. That's a lot of time. Yeah, I wasn't talking continuously the whole time. There would be breaks for them to do hands-on labs, but I got a lot of practice talking to small groups, not big auditoriums or anything like that. And I pretty quickly was able to train myself out of doing ums and ahs. And it feels relevant here. I'll just say the thing I did when I felt an or an ah coming on was I took a breath and closed my mouth and forced myself to breathe through my nose, which is sort of not natural for me. My nose is not like a big, beautiful windpipe. It's kind of restricted and small and a sort of, I don't know. Anyway, it's like I don't breathe naturally through my nose. I'd rather breathe through my mouth. So it was sort of an unnatural thing, but it sort of nipped it in the bud. And I want to throw that out just as something to consider if creating a moment of silence in a conversation is uncomfortable to you. There are things you can do that are kind of mechanical that you do with your body that can help you remember or help you avoid your natural inclination to just keep running your mouth, which is natural to a lot of us.
Agreed. And, you know, one thing that I was trying to get across this week is there are certain moments where silence is going to be very powerful and talking is likely going to introduce the possibility of hurting yourself rather than helping yourself. And so those moments for me in a sale are once you present your offer, that would be a big one.
Yep.
The next one would be progression points. So any point where we need to decide on, are we going to continue progressing forward in the sale or are we going to stop? Mm-hmm. We want to stop, you know, we're going to ask prompt with a decision and then we're going to be quiet.
Right.
And I feel that in addition to what you're saying, Philip, you can focus on your body and you can focus on your body language, but also anticipating these critical moments and just committing to, I'm going to say what I need to say and then stop in these critical moments. It's only one or two moments throughout the process. That'll start to train you to understand how to leave more space for the other person and to draw emphasis to your words.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, like maybe we call it over-talking, you know, talking too much. I think it's generally comes from a very good place, although it can come from insecurity as well. And that's not quote unquote a good place, but in your mind, your intentions are good. You know, I think there's an emotional thing that drives it, but your mind comes up with this justification. Oh, I just, you know, they didn't seem to be saying anything, so I wanted to reiterate it or clarify it, or seems like they might have been confused because nobody said anything. And really, your mind is like, yes, I'm adding value here, but you're destroying a critical white space, a sort of mental white space when you fill it up the wrong way.
I agree with you. I think there's a drive in all of us to say, well, they don't know everything that I know. And so I want to help them know as much as they possibly can. The problem with that, of course, is that's not really a good goal. We should only talk insofar as we're giving a person enough of the right information to make the decision that they need to make and stop there. It reminds me of the quote, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long letter.
Right. You know, this shows up in a lot of places, consulting, sales conversations, training, coaching, mentoring. You're not doing all the work, because if you are, you're depriving the other party of an opportunity to learn something or to think about it for themselves. But I think a lot of us, especially when we're in that more insecure place, we're like, if I'm not doing all the work, I'm under delivering. I think it's the feeling we get, because a lot of us come into the consulting through the freelancing door. And in the freelancing door, that's what you're doing, is you're doing work that somebody else doesn't want to do, that maybe doesn't even want to have to think about. And so we kind of train ourselves to be the one doing, you know, like all the work. Otherwise, we don't feel like we're contributing our fair share. And I think you carry that same mentality into what we're talking about here, and it undermines you.
Yeah. And so I think this begs a question. If, you know, one issue that I see with this is attribution. How do I know that it's because if I see a shift in my client or my potential client, how do I know it's because I've said too much or said the wrong things? And how do I know it's not something else? So what signs do you see, or would you pick up on to say, oh, maybe I should slow down and maybe say a little bit less and add some space here?
Well, it's not a great answer to that question, but if you're not asking permission to do some portion of what you're doing in the sales call, I think you might be doing it wrong. So by that, I mean, here's just a off-the-cuff example. I'm not sure that I explained that very well. Would you guys and gals want me to spend more time talking about that, or should we move on? That's asking for permission to do the thing you're probably dying to do, which is over-explain something or, you know, fill up some silence. So maybe that's one feedback mechanism, is if you don't hear yourself asking for permission at multiple points in a conversation, what you might be doing is lecturing rather than having a conversation.
That's right. And you don't know if they want to be in that portion of the conversation. And I think that's huge. So I talked about progression points. So once we hit these points where we need to make a sort of binary yes or no, should we continue decision, rather than saying, all right, so next up, we're going to have another meeting. Let's talk on Wednesday. Does that work for you? Rather than saying that, asking, you know, I think based on what we've talked about, it sounds like there could be a fit here. The next step, as I see it, would be to meet next week. What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Are you open to that?
Yeah.
And that, I think that that's different, because it gives them the space to say, well, I don't know, maybe not next week. And then you go, oh, wait a minute. All right. We're not there yet. Right. Like what did we miss? Let's go backwards.
Right. Right. Yeah. Jim Camp in his book on negotiation suggests, you know, when like slowing things down is the big idea. And part of, I think what we're sometimes doing when we talk too much is trying to move things forward at an artificially high speed compared to how they want to go. And every client is going to maybe come in at a different place and need a slightly different velocity to move through this process. And when you don't give them permission to control the velocity, I think you undermine yourself. And Jim Camp goes so far as saying, what you should, like, if you feel like everything is settled and, you know, there's just clear agreement on all terms of the agreement, no matter how complex, that a closing strategy, this, you know, I guess a lot of salespeople would call it a closing strategy. He says, can we go over this one more time? You know, this might be at the end of a months long negotiation, and it just runs counter to our instincts, which are, we can see the finish line. We want to like race over it and lean forward and lean into it. And he says, you know, that kind of rushing will kill you at every point of the negotiation, and you shouldn't stop being patient even at the right before the finish line. You should continue this sort of patient approach, and you're, you know, just even up to the last millisecond, you're giving them the opportunity to say no to some aspect of the deal. It's probably not going to fall apart if you've gotten that far. But, you know, the ability to say no to some aspect of it just honors them and helps them trust you and increases the trust, you know, just incrementally at every step of the way. So I think we do kind of erode trust when we're sort of pushing too hard or too, I don't know, just too much.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend whom I really, really respect, and he wrote maybe a month or so ago on LinkedIn that some sales require pushing and some sales require pulling or sort of waiting and attracting people to you. You know, this is always one of the hardest things, which is like, okay, that sounds like great advice, but when do I do one or the other thing? Like we're saying allow more space for other people to talk. When is it weird? When are you being too quiet and you're being almost off-putting by being quiet? Like, is that something that you think about ever?
Yeah, sometimes, but I just have never seen it happen. Like, no matter how much I sort of recede into the background, so to speak, which I'm not saying become a wallflower and become totally inert and not a part of the conversation, but I've sort of experimented with this. I'm like, if I just say nothing and just kind of like, and nod my head when I'm in a something like a sales conversation with a prospective client.
Yes.
I just feel like if they run out of things to say, then that's when I can start talking. So I've never, you know, of course I think back to Glengarry Glen Ross, which is full of so many, you know, kind of dramatic and humorously misguided tropes about sales. Have you seen that movie?
Right. Yep.
Okay. And, you know, there's this moment where one of the salespeople who's selling, I don't even know, it might be a scam. They're selling, you know, real estate that people have never seen and didn't really want, but they've filled out a form and got designated a lead. And then they're handed off to these high pressure salespeople for folks who haven't seen the movie. And for folks who haven't seen the movie, you might want to not have your kids around when you watch it. It's,
yes,
it has more profanity than it's like in the top 50 of movies with profanity. Anyway, he talks about just holding this pen out and sort of daring these people to say no and, you know, doing it for like 5 minutes straight. And then they finally agree to sign. I've, of course, never experienced a situation like that firsthand. So I suppose you could push it too far with the silence and make it weird, but that just seems like a real, I don't know, it seems like a stretch. Have you ever seen anything like that firsthand?
Well, I think most people who really are hearing this and say, oh yeah, I definitely talk too much, I don't think that that's going to be a real challenge for them.
Yeah.
And I think the way that I think about it, no, I haven't seen it because I love to talk so much to answer your question. But the way I think about it is every conversation, it's kind of like having a dance partner. One person needs to lead typically in dance, but you need to be in tune with your partner. You can't be a leader that goes so fast that the other person can't keep up, and you can't go so slow that they're getting aggravated and frustrated by the process. And so, you know, once again, I'm always saying the same thing, which I decided today, Philip, I'm going to be saying this for at least 10 years. Stop selling, start serving. And so part of serving means really having empathy and understanding what does the other person need in this process. And the problem, I think, comes in when we talk too much, when we become out of tune with what the other person needs and wants in that conversation. And we should. So I talked about moments when it becomes obvious that we're talking too much. Mm-hmm. I think if we're in tune with the other person, it'll become obvious that something has shifted in that conversation and we need to stop for a second and check in and say, hey, is this a road you wanted to go down? Was there something else you want to talk about?
Yeah. You know, I just keep coming back to a single breath can be such a useful tool. Because it's almost never an awkward amount of silence to just, I'm not talking about like a little short panicky breath, but like a full deep breath. It's, you know, it's just, again, almost never too much time, and it can help you collect your thoughts. And if you feel like things are not kind of like spiraling out of control or something, or if you feel uncomfortable, it can help kind of relax you just a little bit. And, that seems like a really, in terms of a unit of time, a deep, full breath is, I think, a useful unit of time to think about. By the way, stopsellingstartserving.com, do you own that domain? Somebody does.
I don't own it.
Oh, bummer. Okay, I was going to say that was a good one if it was available. Anyway.
Oh, is it not available?
No, so somebody owns it at GoDaddy. I mean, through GoDaddy, I don't know.
Oh, they're going to sell it to me for $1 million?
Maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I would also advocate maybe even going longer than a few seconds, particularly in these critical moments. So let's take a different example. If you're working with a client and something needs to drastically change in the project, which may affect the price or the timeline or something that you know will lead into a critical conversation, deliver that news and then just be silent until they talk. And I don't mean 2 seconds, 3 seconds. It could be 10 seconds or more, Philip. 10 seconds, that's a lot of silence. So the reason,
Contextually, you know, like if you're in deep thought working on a project, that's like a millisecond, right? But if you have just delivered what is news that you're a little afraid of the consequences of, that can seem like an eternity.
Right.
Absolute eternity. I read Chris Voss's blog. He wrote this book on negotiation that I think was very good.
Yeah, Never Split the Difference.
Yeah. He talks about this technique he calls mirroring, which is just repeating three or four of the last words of a sentence somebody just said to you. Like, let's demonstrate it. I don't know. Say something. I don't know. Make a demand on me.
Philip, would you like to join my cult?
Join your cult. So that's the mirroring technique. That's most people will continue on. You did a great job of maintaining the silence there.
You couldn't take it.
Well, also, I got to go in 3 minutes.
Okay.
So
there's that.
There's some practical concerns. It would have been fun, by the way, to see how long we could have kept that up, because I think we'd make all of our listeners uncomfortable.
Well, and what they can't see is we'd also be having a staring contest over Skype.
That's right, because we keep video on during these calls. That's why you're like a mind reader. When you know I want to say something, you can see it in my face. It's just, you know, I guess the point there is it's something you can practice. And again, it's not a weapon to like beat up your counterpart in a conversation. But it's also something that so few of us get any kind of real practice with that I think we have to actually force ourselves to practice. Do you force people to practice that when you're coaching or training them, Liston?
You know, I haven't, but I think it's a really good idea because it's come up on several different fronts in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, typically I practice what you described earlier, some of the sort of uncomfortable, like, okay, tell me why I should hire you,
right,
or
right,
why I should care about this. And I'll kind of role play that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think the pause and really giving people a sense of what that feels like would be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's so weird because it's literally nothing. You're doing nothing. You're just breathing. You're sitting there. You're talking. But it feels like real labor, emotional labor to do it.
Right.
Well, sorry, I got to bounce early. This was fun, and I think there would have been more to talk about, but because I got sick earlier this week, we had to squeeze this recording in on Friday.
But we did it, and we're still on schedule, and we're close to our 50th episode, Philip, so I'm excited about that.
Me too. This podcast is a lot of fun, and we're getting feedback that it's helpful stuff, so that makes it even better.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy the rest of your day and have a great weekend.
You too, my man. Bye.
All right. Bye.